Brother Brian, do you have the faith? Do you have the faith?
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay. Would you say you had a leap of faith?
I had to take a leap of faith to just watch this movie.
Zing!
Iggy Pop! Amen! Let it ride!
I'm a fucking idiot.
Red meat, we crave sustenance.
I'm an artist.
Hello, my name is Truman Capote.
Why don't you have some fun?
Fun!
Tommy,
that's a tape thing.
Whoever she is, I'm gonna find her and I'm gonna hurt her.
I've spent the past 3 years running Finnish!
I'm always home, I'm uncool.
This is a process of dehypnotization.
Shut up!
Hello and welcome everyone to this week's edition of the P.S. I Love Hoffman podcast, our love letter to the remarkable career of the late, great Philip Seymour Hoffman. I'm Brian Rodriguez.
And I'm Kyle Reinfried.
We're always home, we're always uncool, and we're always ready to talk great movies. Today we'll be chatting about a film entitled...
Leap of Faith.
Yes, Leap of Faith. So, Kyle, what's this one about?
Oh, let's see. Leap of Faith came out in 1992. It is the story of a scam artist preacher, Jonas Nightingale.
Played, a charlatan, if you will.
Ooh, a charlatan. That's an excellent word. played by Steve Martin and his traveling revival. One of their vehicles breaks down and they're stranded in, what was that, Rustwater, Kansas?
Rustwater, Kansas, yeah.
For
fictional town.
4 days, a nice little long weekend in Rustwater. And they decide to set up their big show tent, make a few bucks, but don't plan on the local sheriff, played by Liam Neeson, to intrude on their religious ruse.
Nice, nice little summary there.
Thank you.
So,
hard at it.
Let's get right into this one.
Meat and potatoes.
There's a plus here. We see Philip Seymour Hoffman almost right away.
Yes. So this is...
not all good news, guys.
So what? We've had two films, his Triple Bogey and My New Gun, where he's like in one scene. Son of a Woman, still out of these four now, I'd say his strongest performance.
Yeah, I mean, and this one technically...
And most on and most one, screen time.
As if you've been listening to our podcast, we did do that little error of doing Scent of a Woman first. I guess we just got
so
excited,
now this was his third film. Scent of a Woman would be his fourth.
But this, I would say then, if you're not counting Scent of a Woman, would be his first Hollywood film, like mainstream Hollywood
sure.
film.
Yeah. It's got that 90s vibe to it. You know?
Oh, definitely.
No, very much, I don't know which film, you know, it is numerically, but it has a Twister vibe as far as his role, and like, I guess they're in the Midwest, they're traveling in a vehicle.
Well,
know?
Yeah, I mean, kind of important. It's something we've discussed every time. This is his first film outside...
I mean, Kansas. Is after
outside
we,
New York.
We've talked, well, I wonder if in the end Kansas is going to be his... he's got a lot of New York films, as we discussed.
Yeah.
Will Kansas take it in the second place?
Now, this film does have a New York connection to Steve Martin's character, as we learned originally from New York. But
so he might have met... he's got another... He's got these great characters. I forget what his name was last week, but I think Will or something like that. But his name in this one is Matt. It's like, come on. Like, even Meatloaf is in this. Not a lot of lines. But his name is Hoover. Then you've got that great character actor, MC Gainey. His character's name is Tiny. Like,
yeah.
I want, like, you know, especially when you're on the road, you come up with nicknames for one another.
Well, I kind of want to discuss his little gang here, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, so it starts and they're traveling on this bus. Like you said, it broke down. And he's got a cool gang. And I got to be honest with you, Kyle. I could see you having a little click like this if
Oh, I've always said, like, I mean, well, number one, I would love to find a job that's, like, on the road or whatever. Not, like, all year round. That would just be, like, you know, some months of the year. Like, musician or comedian, point being. Or even, obviously, like, athletes, but they don't get to have as much fun when they're in...
Not revival preacher? Not something for you?
I mean, I just don't have the faith.
But neither did Steve Martin's character.
True.
As we learned.
I'm not a... I'm a bullshitter, but I'm not a con artist. They got, like, this nice little family going. They got about, I guess, two buses worth of people, because they have a huge choir along with them,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, and just, like, yeah, they have the whole choir and this gang. Deborah Winger
big,
is in
like,
this gang.
Big, like, African-American choir.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, like, That's definitely, I'm not a religious person, but I've always said, like, if I, for some reason, wanted to really find a Christian-based faith, I would totally go, like, all in on, like, Southern African American, like, Baptist.
Well, yes. Right? Like a black church. Like a singing black church.
Yeah, hallelujah. Like,
it does seem fun. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. Well, hey, honestly, like, my only experience, Blues Brothers. So.
And film in general. So, I mean.
Yeah, sure.
Me as well. I mean, I've never been to that kind. I've never been to, like, a. I don't think either of us have been to a revival setting.
No.
Is that fair to say? I know I haven't.
Not a,
I didn't want to speak for
a
you.
A Renaissance fair revival.
Okay. <one of yes>. So just back to the gang, because they all seem, at least, I'm not sure, we're not sure about the choir, but they all seem like they're in on this little ruse.
Oh, yeah, they're totally, I mean, just from the get-go, the first scene is like, well, number one, I love the cliche, like, hazy highway. Like, that's, you know what I'm talking about? Like, that's great. Like, the bus is coming down. It says miracles and wonders on the front of the bus. So, just, you know, like, a good, pretty good setup. And we totally... It's good character setup. Unfortunately, then, like, for the rest of the film, it's, like, Steve Martin and Deborah Winger's character versus, like, really getting into, like, Meatloaf. Like, there's no... Those two are the only ones that out of our... revival that have like character arcs.
Yeah, you know? I mean, as much as I mean, you mentioned MC Gainey before, and as much as I want him to be expanded, so where do you recognize him from? I guess I should say,
His biggest thing probably like Lost. Other things too, like he was even like a small role in Beer Fest. What is he? Isn't he in the first? Was he a Is he the limousine driver?
He's the limousine driver, Mighty Ducks. And as soon as I saw him, like, limo driver, Mighty Ducks.
Yeah.
I'm glad he's still on the road.
Yeah.
Another thing, though, that he was in, and I've seen him a million times, and this is the first time I recognize him for this role, Sideways.
Oh, we totally see his dick, right?
Yeah, just, like, the dick flopping
that's
around.
Him,
and, like,
yeah.
That's him.
My goodness.
Yeah, so... Anyone Sideways, you definitely know who we're talking about.
Intimate with MC Gainey.
Yeah, I love that guy.
And now I get his nickname, Tiny. Yeah, so right away we begin the movie, and it's a great character introduction for Steve Martin's Jonas Nightingale. And they get pulled over. What was the exact Meatloaf's, like, the bus driver, but he also plays the organ. Like, they all kind of double-dip in their jobs.
Yeah, he's a man of many talents in this film.
Something, point being, like, it's not important except for... So Steve Martin just goes out and starts talking to, and I recognize the guy that played the cop, too. He's in, like, Ace Ventura and plenty of other
things. Oh, yeah.
Midwestern... cop, and the whole thing that we learn from this is Steve Martin is really good. He's like almost like a Sherlock in a ways of that he sees a sticker on the cop car of like a college. I don't know, just a bunch of little facts. And he's getting arrested because he's kind of giving like more attitude than a cop, especially from that area, wants to deal with. And he's in the car, and he just goes into this whole, like, pretty much just picks him apart and says, like, about his marriage and his relationship with his daughter.
It seems like he's reading his mind a bit. We get the reveal that he's being aided in a couple ways.
Yeah. Deborah Winger's character, Jane. So you got Jonas and Jane. That's, come on, writers. That's, like, film 101, unless there's, like, a big reason to have characters.
Double J
with,
names.
Yeah,
here,
exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
Whatever.
Yeah, so she assists him with, like, an earpiece on, like, especially during the revivals, but I think a little bit during then, too. But I just love it, because everyone's in the big bus, and they're taking bets.
Yo, Roger, frequency 6, check your local listing.
You got a call rating, $10 Annie, who's in?
I'm with my boss.
I'm getting with Lucille.
Titus, you with Lucille?
I say you can't do it. You can't do it.
Where's your loyalty? Right.
Ooh, child, he looks nasty.
Oh, this is gonna be good. This is gonna be real good.
What's the cold meeting?
Oh, is this beautiful country or what? How fast was I going?
80 and a 55.
Philip Seymour Hoffman has, like, Ready to Rock, Boss. Yeah. Like, that's, you know, that's
he's
like.
Got,
that's
he's the, got these lines.
That's the, like, character. He just has such great infection. No, affection. Wait. What's the word I'm looking for?
Now you got me tripped. I was gonna say affliction, but it's. No.
Okay, God. See, I'm not. No. We're both bad.
No, but like I had it as soon as you said it, uh-huh. And then like.
Afflection? Is that it?
The way.
Can someone get us the P.S. I love thesauruses?
Inflection, right? Inflection.
Inflection. So, yeah, not infection. That's why I.
Yeah,
got close.
Yeah. And
inflection.
Then I knew it as soon as you said it, and then I started thinking of other things that it could be.
Exactly.
Inflection. Yes.
Inflection. He has such.
Philip Seymour Hoffman has tremendous inflection.
Well, I'm a dumb. I'm a dingus like Diane Lane last week. So it's just like what a great like intro. Meatloaf's in it. He's wearing a Hawaiian shirt. I'm sold.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you know what I was wondering when I saw this too? Who do you think you would be on that bus?
I'd like to think a combo of Meatloaf and Philip Seymour Hoffman, because Meatloaf doesn't talk much, and I definitely would have like getting in on the situation comments like Philip Seymour Hoffman, but I'm totally like a driver, Hawaiian shirt wearing, maybe organ playing Meatloaf.
Fair. So I mean, as you mentioned, we're introduced to Steve Martin.
You're Jane.
Just I'll talking, be Jane. Okay.
Yeah, you're just talking the ears of people.
Behind the scenes.
Behind
instigating.
The scenes. Yeah, exactly. Instigating, yeah.
Steve Martin, and we're seeing his thing. I mean, and it's kind of even evident from the beginning that this is a Steve Martin vehicle, this film.
Well, interesting enough, one of the few facts I learned on IMDb from this is that Michael Keaton, he quit the production. So it's not like he was just up for it.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, which
it definitely feels like a Steve Martin film. But I
totally see Michael Keaton in the role.
I see Michael Keaton as this, but I don't see the same tone.
Michael Keaton is much more slick.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Nothing against. I'm not trying to.
No. I know exactly
what
you're saying.
Love Steve
and
Martin.
I think the tone is a little different with Michael Keaton. I think it's a little dirtier with Michael Keaton because he seems more slick, as you said. He seems more of a conniver than Steve Martin. Steve Martin has, there's heart to Steve Martin, you know?
Steve Martin, like, I mean, I'm sure they still would have had, like, you know, the whole con artist. But we get this, not to go, like, totally out of the way, the sheriff is played by Liam Neeson, and at one point he goes to, like, the second showing of the revival or the third one, something like that, and he reads the whole rap sheet that he finds out Jonas Nightingale's real name. Don't have it right there in front of me. But point being, he's got, you know, whatever his real name is, and he's from New York.
Yeah, he's calling him out. I mean, we'll get there.
Yeah. But I think they would have kept that, probably, you know, would have stayed New York or something like that for Michael Keaton as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I see films like, one that comes to mind, I don't know if you've seen it, Gung Ho. It's, you know, it's a film where Michael Keaton is, like, at an auto plant and interacts with Japanese people. Like, that's my synopsis. That's why you write the synopsis. Synopsis-y.
Synapse. Well, Steve Martin seems like a guy that, as the character Nightingale, thinks ahead, versus if it was Michael Keaton, he almost looks like someone that's like really good on the fly.
Yeah,
and both of them like are, but again, just like, I don't know,
they just bring different things to the role. So
yeah,
I think it's
a different
film.
Obviously, would happen for most actors, but the point being, I see this. It's not like I'm like, ooh, I couldn't see
well,
either.
Well, this isn't,
this
yeah,
movie.
But I don't think Michael Keaton plays this as a character, just as, like, Steve Martin doesn't play this as a character.
Yeah.
It's not a character piece. This is more Steve Martin's film, like it would have been Michael Keaton's film. And that's why, like, you would have seen the differences. But we're with Steve Martin.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine. He's a lovable guy. Yeah. By the way, before we get any further, just want to make clear, neither of us has seen this film.
Yes.
We mentioned it last week, but we just want to say it again. It was just not, it's not, I don't think this was a very popular film. I couldn't find the budget. It made $20-something million.
Yeah, it's just got that a married couple rented this.
Yeah, you know, I mean, like, this is very much a rental movie. You know?
Yeah, and so.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could find it on Stars now.
Like, by all means, it doesn't show like it doesn't show the true capabilities of Steve Martin.
No, it certainly does not, and I want to make that clear. But actually, the critics at the time gave it pretty good praise, 67% on Rotten Tomatoes, which
yeah, in the end of the day, you know,
isn't
it's
terrible.
It's a middle of the road, you
middle
know.
Of the road film.
Yeah,
in the middle of the country,
essentially. Yeah, exactly.
So let's get back to some plot points here.
Sure. So after that first scene, pretty much they're continuing down the road, but then you know, they're all on the walkie-talkies and stuff like that, and one of the trucks is having a little engine problem. Coming to town, I think Meatloaf tells them, like, it's just, it's going to be, like, at least 4 days or something like that. I think one of them.
Yeah, so yeah. So they decide, right, to just make their money in this town and
yeah,
put the
I forget,
show in this town.
Were they on their way to Topeka?
Yeah, Topeka, because... Yeah.
I mean, by all means, yeah, this is a little podunk, rustwater
Deborah,
town.
Yeah, Deborah Winger's character says she was looking forward to seeing Topeka. Oh, because there was a shelter there because she wants to adopt a dog
yeah,
or something.
Great Dane.
Great Dane,
this
yeah,
is really weird.
Good idea. Yeah, so Topeka, I guess bigger city, more money, and Steve Martin... You kind of get his, like, his character's arrogance here. He thinks he could make money in this podunk town.
So that's what they decide to do. You know, set up, Jonas even, set up, we'll play here. You know, play. Like, you know, definitely yeah. setting up that this is, he's not a believer. They go, him and Jane, and they go to the sheriff's office. And as we said, sheriff is played by Liam Neeson.
Liam Neeson, surprising role. I wasn't surprised. I mean, I was yeah. surprised to see him in
what's his, do
Rust
we know
Order,
his,
Kansas.
What's his, like, big start?
His, like, breakthrough is definitely Schindler's List. But yeah. I don't know what his start
which
is.
Which is, like, 94.
Yeah, like, it's like, wow, this is, like...
I know he was all the way back... He's in one of the... He's in, like, one of the last Dirty Harry movies, Deadpool.
Mm.
The Deadpool. But, yeah, so this is, like, early Liam Neeson.
Yeah.
So him trying to do, like, a Kansas accent. Or just... American.
Just, it was just, yeah, it wasn't. I wouldn't call it a Kansas accent. It was just his attempt at neutral American.
Neutral. There we go.
This. I think he's a terrific actor.
Oh, sure.
I don't have a problem with
yeah.
that. I just. I mean, it is early in his career. I'm sure he took this movie. You know, obviously for the money, trying to get a start.
I'm surprised. No, like again, no offense to him, because we all know he's a great actor. Kind of surprised, like he did get this role though. Like it's just point being, because it's. I mean, it definitely is like probably the. In, like, the third biggest role in the film, I guess?
Yeah, I would right? say so.
Like, we go from, yeah, Steve Martin, Deborah Winger, Liam Neeson.
Top five, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess the diner waitress.
Yeah, diner waitress, Marva.
Well, I mean, maybe he just had a great audition because of his acting talents. Like, he can make it work. And it's not, look, it's not terrible.
No, I'm not saying, like, oh, man, this movie's so unbelievable and I didn't like it because Liam Neeson and his accent or whatever.
This director, by the way, Richard Pierce, we haven't mentioned him because, honestly, there's not too much to mention. I looked through his career.
There's really nothing. But this is by far his biggest movie.
Yeah.
And he didn't really have, like, any...
So
like,
I'm not sure if, like, the director just didn't care, like...
Oh, you know what? Wait, did
call him out on this?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, we're introduced to Liam Neeson.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of right away knows... that they're scam artists here. And he originally denies them a permit because, frankly, he says the town can't afford it. I believe Steve Martin's character, like, pulls some lawyer bullshit on him.
He doesn't really deny much during the whole film. He just kind of,
no.
like, eschews.
Yeah.
I loved it after that scene, him and Jonas and Jane are driving, and Meatloaf's Paradise by the Dashboard Light is playing.
Yeah, it's not playing in the background of the film, let's be clear. It's
no,
like,
it's diegetic. It's playing on
yes,
the radio.
It's playing on the radio. So, in this universe that Leap of Faith exists in,
yeah,
Meatloaf exists,
yes.
as well as this character played by Meatloaf.
Yeah.
Maybe they tell him, hey, you look like Meatloaf.
Both Hoover and Meatloaf exist.
Yes. So, I think in the next, or one of the next scenes we're introduced to two more important characters, the diner scene.
And we meet Marva, who is this very cute Auburn, going from Scent of a Woman, waitress. And
classic country diner waitress.
Yeah.
Romance.
But all the other older waitresses are like, oh, be nice to him. He's, you know, he's a preacher.
He's a man of God.
And she just automatically... Well, she has a disposition against religious people, and we'll talk about that in a second. But, or preachers, I should say, maybe not religious people. And she kind of gives Steve Martin sass while he's, like, 110% obviously flirting with her.
Yeah, I think he even, like, states that clearly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally.
He's kind of trying to use her
again,
his
very
tricks
open
on her.
Character.
Yeah. He's trying to use his tricks on her,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, he says to Jane, like, oh, she wasn't biting to any of my lines.
Yeah.
You know.
And
he's very candid, obviously, with the people he works with. And then, for the most part, without, like, anyone knowing his background... It's just, if you're not a fool, you're going to get what kind of person he is. What, or what, you know, what his character is.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, It's pretty straightforward.
No, this whole thing, this film is like, it's very straightforward, and, you know, then they go on the radio, they pretty much to get people, and, you know, get an audience. I love it. They're going around, and Steve Martin, oh, that's something I was going to ask you, because you're very knowledgeable in sports, and I know you definitely know some facts also about Steve Martin. What's his whole thing with basketball? Because in, what is that, Father of the Bride, he's got favorites. Yeah.
I don't know, actually.
Because in this movie, like, then he sees some young fellas playing a game of hoops.
Hoops, yes.
And he takes this really long, like, what it would almost be from, like, half court.
Yeah.
Further, maybe?
No, it's not further than, like, an NBA half court. But it's at least, it's definitely a long three-pointer.
Yeah. So.
And he just, yeah, takes it and says, oh, you'll come to my revival if I sink this shot. And he, like, sinks it.
Yeah. Like, easily. Yeah. Which it looks like he took, kind of took a shot. I mean, it was probably true for Tucker.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's got a whole big thing with his daughter, you know, in Father of the Bride playing basketball.
Yeah.
And it just seems like something that he's like, oh, that's something I can do, I can relate with on an emotional level. Not that it was a big part in this movie, but I saw that and I was like, huh, let me ask Brian about that.
I mean,
but,
you would definitely like, and I think that's, we kind of touched on it before, that's what's kind of missing though, like more Steve Martin being Steve Martin. He is Steve Martin, but he's not, classic Steve Martin.
So, again, just the fact that it's not like Michael Keaton, like it said, now production, that could have been pre-production, I don't know.
Yeah, really just said he might have stepped in a couple of days before. There wasn't much literature.
They could have started filming a couple of days. Yeah, who knows? True. I don't know. But point being, the fact that it says he quit production, it's not like, you know, he was, you know, because there's plenty of times you read and it says blah, blah, blah was up for the part.
Yeah.
I think that they might have, you know, just had some more stuff in mind with Michael Keaton where you would have written another. And hey, listen, Steve Martin's a comedian. He can definitely do improv and stuff like that. But I heard the man is very much business, like very, you know, like a straight shooter in real life.
Okay.
And so I think when he reads a script, like what's in front of him, and then I think it probably comes down to the director too. I think he's definitely a very collaborating person.
That makes sense.
And so I think if, you know, if he reads the script, like he'll do his, you know, version of that. But then also, if he isn't given much direction, you know, he'll do his job. He's not yeah. phoning it in.
No, he certainly didn't phone in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And then pretty much the next scene is we get the first look at the revival. And it was just very interesting. It was like you could see the art of the scam. They're all going around listening to people talking.
Yeah, there's a big technology aspect of it.
Oh, yeah. I wrote that. What was... my exact line. Oh, I put computer research mind blown in 92. Like this is on the same level as what's the girl's name in Jurassic Park?
Lex.
Lex. Yeah, you know, like that, like, was like a whole, like, you know,
you name it, we got it. Yeah. Like, I'm a hacker.
Yeah, exactly. Like that whole, like, that was like, you know, computers were such a like big part of the world of Jurassic Park. Like computers, and, you know, she logs where people are sitting and stuff like that. She was even doing
Jane,
research.
Jane. So Jane runs the truck in the inside, and
yeah,
basically
she's Steve Martin's like right hand lady.
Philip Seymour
Hoffman. There's a little bit of a sting between them.
A little
bit.
She definitely
they flirt with one another, and he gets the puppy for her at one point. She's always asking him for, even though it's not like a real engagement ring, she says stuff. Point being, I think she, like, if Steve Martin wanted to, I think she would.
Yeah, possibly. Maybe they had in the past. We don't know. I mean, but they seem to be friends and on very good terms, and, you know, that flirty dynamic of friends.
Yeah.
So she runs the show in the truck.
He runs the stage. She runs behind backstage.
And I would say Meatloaf more runs the front stage.
Okay, sure. I'm sorry. I'm just saying.
Yeah,
like,
Steve Martin is more the face of it. Yeah, he works the stage.
Yeah.
And they basically, Meatloaf and Philip Seymour Hoffman's character and some of the other lackeys will just find things out about the audience, relay it to Deborah Winger's character, Jane. She'll find out stuff on the internet, or not really the internet, kind of just doing like basic research, and then she She'll place where they're seating, and she'll feed it through Steve Martin's microphone, so he can pick out, this man is deaf of hearing, or deaf of hearing, hard of hearing, or, someone who just lost their job, and basically, like, the magic of his performance doesn't come from God, it
and
comes
then you
from,
know
like,
what?
This information.
The more you give, the more you live. That's it. He's a man of, just as we've seen, he doesn't... It's funny because he is, I think, another person. I think Michael Keaton, again, if we gave him the same backstory, I think he would have hammed up an accent. And so, point being, he comes out, and so I'm not exactly, per se, sold on him being, like, you know, this snake oil salesman of a preacher. But... He does a good job, but I'm just saying, like, that from seeing just televangelists and stuff like that, he doesn't go, like, full hundo, you know.
Yeah, he's not particularly, like, I don't think, I mean, not that any of them, those people would convince me, but he doesn't seem particularly, the movie indicates that he's convincing, clearly, but he's not that convincing with my eyes. You know.
No, but I guess, well, okay, so this is the big thing for the town, for Rustwater, and this is why it's such a clever name. They're in, like, a very, you know, so it's like a podunk town, but they're, like, most of Kansas, like, a crop town, and they haven't gotten rain in quite some time. Seems like it's their, what would be their dry season, but it definitely seems...
Yeah, they said 7 years of basically bad harvests in this town.
Oh, wow, okay, I didn't even pick up on that. So, yeah, so pretty much, you know, they're in some dire straits. A lot of them, besides these personal problems, for the most part, people are wanting to know, when is this rain going to come?
That's basically, the whole town is shut down, or I think it says 27% of unemployment in this town.
Yeah, and that's where...
Because of the rains and the drought.
And as a good guy, as the sheriff... Liam Neeson doesn't want these good people that have very few dollars left in their, not even bank accounts, in their wallets.
Yeah.
To be handing over $10, $5 to...
Because they're basically giving everything they have to Steve Martin's ministry.
Through faith, hoping that it'll reward them.
These people are ripe for the picking, essentially.
Which is always interesting to me, because again, like, it's where... In their minds, where does this money go? Like, if I... The very few times I've... I mean, I don't... Through my own memory, I don't have being in church, like, besides, like, funerals and weddings. But the collection plate... At least, you know, like, when that goes around, you're, like... You know, it's a stable place, and you know it's going to that place.
Yeah,
yeah,
if it's your... Yeah, if it's your church, it's going to that... The payments of that church, theoretically, you know?
Like, you... Like, again, because you see, obviously, how many people are working and setting up this traveling thing. One would have to wonder, how do these people make a living? Oh, is it through my money? So if each of these people make minimum wage, even then, through these collections... Like, I think in the first show, they make... $5,000,
something along those lines. But I mean, we should be clear. Like, in this tent that they set up in the fairground, it's quite a performance. They have
full crazy lights,
lots of lights, and
like
and
we said, and there's a lot of people involved. They've got a full like 30-person choir.
Had to come from somewhere, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
how do they pay for it? I don't know where they're draining the electricity from, but
true.
You know.
Now maybe they have generators. That's what I'm
okay.
Asking.
So then they're paying for gas. You know.
Well, it's weird. I guess not weird. I guess it's very 90s and very easy Hollywood comedy. But for a movie called Leap of Faith, it doesn't touch into too many religious things, if you know what I'm saying. They keep it very neutral there. Because I know what you're discussing in terms of, like, there's this whole thing, and again, this is not a religion podcast, or like, but there's that whole thing, like, and I just know it from, like, the news, this whole gospel of prosperity that these... revivalist preachers do preach, like, you give me money and you're going to be rewarded with, God's going to reward you because you're rewarding me.
Yeah.
Which, again, and from my ears sounds completely silly, but that's, you know, teach his own. It's a country of...
Scientology.
Yeah, we'll get into that later.
Levels go down.
In a later podcast, obviously. But that, like, that kind of struck me a little bit, that they don't so much touch that, but it's understandable. Again, this is supposed to be like a simple, easy comedy, I guess, right? It's
not. Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess back to the
dramedy.
Dramedy, yes. I get, but it's not like I wouldn't call this a dark comedy or anything.
No, I mean it falls into the same realm as like I mean what like Steve what like this time period of Steve Martin is like the Father of the Bride. You know, like there's
yeah.
It's got comedic elements because of its actors, but as far as its like story, it's grounded.
Oh yeah, it's not like a slapstick.
Yeah, it's not Roxanne.
No.
Or I don't know what's another The Jerk.
The Jerk, Three Amigos.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, great movie.
But yeah, so what? After this, we meet Boyd, Marva's younger brother, and this is the big like. So this brings.
Well, we see him earlier, right? When he's.
Yeah, well, technically we first meet him when Steve Martin is just doing a little trick for some kids.
Yeah, and we see him.
And with the water, squirt gun, and he tosses it to Boyd in the car, but we don't really know who he is.
No, we don't know who he is.
Yeah. And so then we officially meet him when Steve Martin goes back into the diner to hit on Marva, and there's this teenage boy, Boyd. That's what the whole time. Did you think that?
I was thinking he was calling him Boy
the whole time, but it was Boyd. A very Midwestern, Southern kind of name. And yeah, so this kid's playing chess. Very seems like a mature young kid.
Steve Martin and him kind of have a little like scene playing chess while he's hitting on his sister.
Yeah, exactly.
He kind of gives him a blessing though, Boyd.
Yeah. Totally, yeah. I think there's a little bit of like he feels bad for his sister.
Yeah.
Because so Boyd has a problem with a leg, is it one leg, both legs. It's definitely it's one leg. He wouldn't be able to walk.
Yeah, he can't walk regularly.
Yeah, he's got those
in, braces, and he's in like those kind of crutches things.
Yeah, like someone with like cerebral palsy would be like using.
And it's revealed that their parents died.
Well, he and his parents were in a car accident where his parents died, and he was trapped in there, and they couldn't get to him, and so by the time like they couldn't do, they've tried multiple surgeries, and this is where Marva grew her resentment for a lot of preachers, is because they said, oh, we can heal him, and they gave money, and they, you know, they got her brother's hopes up a lot.
Yeah.
Ultimately, she's not ready to take her leap of faith. With
what's the title?
Oh yeah, it is. With Jonas.
That just reminds me. Don't you kind of feel sometimes that they think of the title before the movie?
I do that sometimes.
That's true, but like this is definitely one of those films that it's possible with.
It's either that or it's just a who the hell knows what we're gonna call this. Oh, let's just kind of go with it.
Yeah, let's find a cliche catchphrase that people hear. Yeah.
Yeah, so honestly, after this scene, we meet all like this is that's like we meet all of our main characters, and it pretty much comes down to, as I said earlier, then we've got our second revival, and this is where before then you definitely see that Jane first is a distraction, I think, to keep the sheriff away from meddling in with Jonas. She is flirting with him and talking to him a lot, but she goes by his house. And he's even giving, like, her a foot rub, and then he takes her into the field and shows her the butterflies. I don't know. The point being, definitely start having...
There's a romance there. I mean, I kind of like that there was a secondary romance.
Well, that's, like, the main romance.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, you're right. Well, I was
thinking... Marva never gives in to Jonas's...
No, but there's, like, a whole flirtation there, obviously.
Sure.
But, I mean, I think Deborah Winger's character here, Jane, believe it or not...
What were her big films?
Terms of Endearment, mm-hmm. Officer and a Gentleman.
Yeah, so, you know, she was definitely a go-to in the 80s, early 90s.
Had a name, especially at the time. I think she has second billing here.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, good for her, and I think she's a good actor. I don't know a lot of her movies well. Like, obviously, I've seen more Steve Martin films, but...
And that's why she'll be our next podcast.
Yes. I'm trying to think of a good Winger pun, but
Flinging with
it.
Winger. Wait. Flinger Winger.
Yes, our Deborah Winger
Buffalo
podcast.
Winger.
Come on. Buffalo Winger. Yeah, no, I can't think like Ernie or Wingers. No.
Ernie or Wingers.
Deborah.
Deborah.
Sorry, I had to throw that in.
Raven.
Okay. Her character is pretty strong in this, believe it or not, for the time.
Very independent woman, yes.
Very independent woman. And she gets her own arc, and she's not just, like, a thing. Too many times in these films we see, like, the women characters are just a side piece. Like, just
yeah.
you know what I'm saying, just like a part of like the window dressing of this. But she has her own arc, which is nice. And like you were saying, it does get a little weird, Liam Neeson like showing her butterflies in the cornfields, a little like country and corn ready, and it's just a whatever, but still. Good for them, I guess.
So during this second revival, I think is she late for that one?
Yeah, she's a little late.
And pretty much the sheriff wants to testify. But him testifying is calling out Jonas, and this is when he pulls up his whole rap sheet of stuff.
Yeah, this is when we learn all these things, that he was an orphan. Yeah,
he's from the Bronx.
Honestly, I don't really...
And Steve Martin, or Jonas, is like angry. He goes off stage, but then his gears start turning, and you see how he's going to flip it.
Yeah, and this is kind of... I think Michael Keaton would have been had an interesting take on this one more than Steve Martin. But he flips it, and he flips it well. But honestly, like, when you think about it, and that's what I was going to mention before, it's not that hard to flip. It's like, he mentions that he's actually from New York, he's not from Appalachia, and that he's an orphan. And it's like, oh my God, how do you expect these people to feel bad for the orphan? It's silly. It's not the best writing.
So he gives them their money back.
And that's where, that's the boldest thing, actually, he does. He gives them their money back, and...
And he even gives some people extra money, because then the big thing is, he realizes, oh, man, like, we gotta, like, because now we're losing money, and we don't want to be, like, you know, totally, like, Frankenstein, angry villagers running us out of town kind of scenario. So he goes in, the security guard, which I guess is a local guy, because then the sheriff asks him the next day at the revival, Jonas paints open eyes on big Jesus on the crucifix. And so when we're at our third revival, this is just like, everyone's like, oh my God. And there starts being some, you know, like a little bit of news coverage, and they get a big crowd to come, people from long distances. And this whole time, Boyd has really wanted, you know, a close relationship with Jonas, and
he
obviously
likes him,
yeah, he likes
and
him.
He is a faithful person.
Yeah,
Boyd. He still has like hope that
yes, Marva has given up, but Boyd is very much faithful. And so Boyd is trying to get his attention, and Jonas ends that third revival without helping him, but then the crowd is saying one more.
It's kind of like an encore, yeah.
Yeah.
He's like healing people left and right. It's like a big extravaganza, and they just want like one more. They want an encore.
So it comes back out, and this is where it gets kind of weird. This is something that, like, I was expecting when we saw the trailer, because that's what we tend to watch, the trailer before we watch the film. This is where I expected it to be in the beginning of the film, what the film was going to be more about.
Yeah, kind of a weird trailer, right? Because
Boyd has a honest-to-God miracle, and he doesn't have to use his crutches
anymore.
Yeah,
he starts walking again,
yeah.
And everyone is just... I mean, like, obviously, this is a kid they know from their town. They probably see him a lot, and suddenly he's walking. And Steve Martin originally, like, thinks that he was being scammed by Marva and Boyd.
So he's all pissed off, and he even says, like, calls Boyd out on it, but he sees that Boyd is being sincere. Marva comes in and thanks him. And this is the... you know, like, when watching it, I'm, like, looking at it, like, oh, how much time is left? I'm like, oh, this is, like, towards the end of the film or whatever. And pretty much Steve Martin decides to leave.
Yeah.
And so he just gets a couple of his things and flags down a tractor trailer and hops on this tractor trailer. And by then, there's already, like, there's a huge crowd for that third revival because they heard about the open-eyed Jesus on the crucifix. But then it's just like, and we see a bunch of people are camping, and looks like they would obviously then stay there for a while and make some money. And they go into Steve Martin when he's all pissed off, and Jane goes after him in like their RV or in their, you know, big bus. The whole, you know, the Meatloaf, Tiny, and Philip Seymour Hoffman's character come in, and you know what, let's play, this is like the one, like, really besides the beginning of the film, this is the good talking point for Philip Seymour Hoffman's character.
Yeah, so let's play it now.
Blow to those roofs. They are going out of their minds. I had to get the boys to start clearing the tent, or else those yokels would have torn it down.
You gotta see the money coming in. It's through the roof, man.
All I know is that by this time tomorrow afternoon, we're gonna be all over every television station in the country.
Oh, man, do you know what that means? We can play you all.
So come on. You can tell me the truth. What is this, an elaborate setup or what?
Hello, Leon.
What do you think?
Hoover. Great, man, great. Hey, but never mind that. Listen, last night...
Notice, I gotta hand it to you. I don't know how you did it, but getting that kid in the act was a stroke of genius.
You give that kid a haircut, man, you put him in some fancy clothes, you put that kid on the stage! It's money in the bank, man!
Hey, well, maybe we could even get him to reenact it.
Do you know what we could bring in Dallas in 1 week? 1 week. Seven figures. Seven figures, man. Jonas, man. What do you think?
Come on, Jonas.
Do it.
Do it! You're a genius, man! Genius!
Jonas, wait. Listen to me.
That's money in the bank, man. Like, this is okay, great. We've got, like, that's why we love him.
Yeah, he whenever he delivers a line, again, we're fans.
It's
so
just enjoyable.
We're biased, but, like, you smile. You can't help but smile.
He just reminds you of someone you know.
Absolutely. And, like, just to be clear, there, it seems like everyone's excited about this, how well the revival went, and they're gonna take the show on the road. He mentions,
yeah,
like,
he mentions they're gonna make seven, they could make seven figures
seven
in
figures
Dallas.
Seven figures in Dallas, yeah. And basically, they think the kid's in on it, but as we mentioned, Steve Martin knows he wasn't in on it because he didn't do it. And yeah, once he realizes, kind of like, wow, this guy was just healed.
Yeah, you know what? That's, I think
he finds his faith, right? Like,
yeah, well, that's, yeah, I wrote that down. Like, he has faith now, but you know what? He doesn't have faith at that point. I think he starts realizing, wow, there actually is something higher going on, right? Like, right around here.
Okay, yeah.
So I'm not gonna mess with this anymore. He was just naturally like in a, I think he was an unhappy person in general. Like,
fair.
He's got, you know, I mean, you know, he's got his family, he's got his friends, like this, you know, road family or whatever. Seems like he kind of enjoys, or he's good at what he does, but who knows if he actually enjoys it, because there is that great, Boyd, there's something said in the beginning of the film, then Boyd says it to him in the tent when Jonas confronts him, and what's the line? It's, the line's pretty much around, like, it doesn't matter. You remember how that went?
So at the beginning of the diner, he says, Boyd questions him on whether it's fake or not. It's like,
yeah,
something along the lines of, like, what does it matter if it's real or fake?
Yeah.
As long as you're helping people.
Yeah, okay, so Steve Martin says that to him in the beginning of the film.
In the beginning of the film.
And then, hey, 180.
Boyd, yeah, Boyd, boom, back at you.
Yeah.
you know, and it's basically, you know, and he has a point that, like, I guess...
Not in the case of getting water. People praying for something like that.
No, no, not in the case of that, and not in the case of taking their money.
Yeah.
But if you're helping them believe, and you're helping them just, I guess, have confidence to find that new job or something like that, then, yeah, I mean, he has a point. It doesn't matter if it's real or fake. Then again, it's extrapolated, though, when Boyd can walk again.
Yeah, so that's why it feels, like, kind of out of place.
Yeah, that's why it's a little weird, because it's not like, oh...
And then they kind of...
His intentions are good.
Then, they kind of double down in, like, the last, like, 15 minutes of this film. Steve Martin decides to, for one reason or another, get out of there,
yes,
leaves his like mirror jacket and then an envelope for Jane with that ring that she said that she wanted or whatever, like when she was joking, when are you going to give me that? I don't know if she calls it an engagement ring.
No, it's just like a ruby.
Diamond ring.
No,
I think,
it's
even
ruby.
Was, yeah, but I feel like
she says ruby. She says ruby.
Oh, okay.
And it's like...
And so he leaves that for her. Maybe there's a note in there too. It's just his sign of, you know, oh... Like, I'm gone. That's his way of saying it.
Yeah,
gone.
He just takes off, and then...
Like I said, they double down, and he's driving off, and it starts raining.
Starts raining. The cure of all, you know, the town's ills happens.
Yeah, and everyone, the people are camping outside of the big tent. They're all cheering and dancing in the rain. And, I mean, it's a nice ending, but it felt a little rushed in the sense of... That's a good ending if the film and Boyd getting healed was earlier in the film.
Yeah, that part of it's a little weird. It's a little weird pacing in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to touch on something, and I'm sure this show is relatively new, and I know most of you probably haven't seen it, but something that's, like, very weirdly similar to this film is that HBO series, The Young Pope.
Oh, I did not watch that. How is that?
I just finished it, and honestly, like, The Young Pope, much, much better than this.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yes, for obvious reasons.
It's not TV. It's HBO.
True, true. But it kind of explores that, like, I mean, The Young Pope more, I think he questions God, or, like, I don't want to, like, ruin it.
Yeah.
But then it kind of leaves you on a similar note, but done much better.
Sure. Okay.
But in terms of just, like, questioning the mysteries of this world, supposedly, and the mysteries of faith.
Okay.
And I think...
It's a companion piece?
Yes, it's a companion piece. I think, though, that this is something that... this is probably a story that you see in a lot of literature, you know, a lot of books, and a lot of other films.
It's got a little bit of the hero's journey going on.
A little bit, yeah.
Right?
And it's all that... It's that whole thing. I mean, look, there are... the original stories, what are they? They're all religious stories, right?
Sure.
They're all, you know...
Metaphors.
Metaphors and legends and stuff like that. And it's about, like, explaining the unexplained. Now, this doesn't really explain the unexplained.
No.
But it just touches on that whole...
There is something bigger and greater out there.
Yes. And it's not just that there's two meatloafs that
exist. I thought he would, once it started raining, I thought the truck was going to turn around.
I mean, that would have been a nice touch. But I guess he just, you know, accepted his new fate.
All right, I've got a question for you. What do you think, then, to our characters? What do you think happens? What do you think happens to the revival? What do you think happens to Jane? Does she stay with the sheriff?
I mean, there's too much stuff. Someone must continue it, right? Maybe Meatloaf.
Maybe who?
Meatloaf.
No, I wrote this. I said... I like to think that Philip Seymour Hoffman's character takes the reins.
Oh, I would like, and then it just
seeing how
it spins into another one.
Then
of
he goes
films.
Back in time, and he's the master.
Yeah, he's the master. Would you say that this is his religious trilogy, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Leap of Faith,
Doubt and the
master?
Just I love it. I love it.
Well,
it's fantastic.
We will touch. I mean, it's funny that you bring that up because we will touch on more of the religious implication. Of things in both ways, in Doubt and the Master,
you know,
more so than this because
he's
not the lead.
You know,
here.
I think religious might not be the right word, but a movie that deals with like faith and like the greater like aspect and what life is about. I'm always gonna say because I always want to say the place, but Synecdoche,
New York.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's
the,
another one.
The place is Schenectady. This is Schenectady.
The place between the pines.
Yeah.
Or beyond the pines. One of them. That's, yeah, I mean, maybe this is something he's interested in. Now, again, and we kind of always touch on this, like, let's be honest, it's early in his career. He just probably...
Oh, he took a role. Yeah.
Yeah, took a role.
Yeah, yeah.
But
this
it's definitely
his third,
something he...
This is in his first, like, years of his career. So this was his, you know, one of three films in 92... He's got three films in 93.
There might have been another film filmed in 92, which I just saw today, but it was definitely... We have it released a couple years later. That's that foreign film.
Yeah, there's a Polish film
that
we're going to try to get our hands on.
That's going to be a tough one to get our hands on, but... Regardless, yeah, this is early in his career, so he's taking these roles because they're, you know, they're offered to him.
I think
but later
people...
we see him explore religion and faith and... religion in with the big R in terms of like the corporate religion, and religion in terms of the higher mysteries.
Yeah, I'm sure he auditioned, but I could definitely see this being a film that helped him get his role in Twister.
Yeah, that's another.
We said earlier
we'd say
it's similar
this is the
to
Kansas.
His role,
yeah, the Kansas.
But I think
aspect of it.
Yeah, like I think this was you know if he has a reel or something like that at that point, or just I don't know whatever to hand.
I mean, it's similar. He's like a drifter in the mid. Middle America
yeah,
on the road.
Yeah, he's in a fun vehicle. With people, with a, you know,
a team of misfits.
Yeah, misfit family. Makeshift, that's what I wanted to say. Makeshift family.
Yeah, I mean, and that we'll see this explored in Twister as well, in terms of... But this is, again, this is a character he's playing early on.
I love it. I wish there was more of it.
I want to touch on something, though. Like, what age do you peg him at, his character here?
Honestly, like, I mean, just because I feel like I'm still young and not going to be, like, turning 30 in June. I feel like he's like close to my age.
It's funny because in Scent of a Woman, which is around the same time, he plays
supposed to be like a junior.
Yeah, he's like a junior in high school.
Which he looks
and
much,
he
looks much younger a year in the no the same year.
So same when year. So it's funny because so when, I think when Philip Seymour Hoffman plays that brat character, it kind of seems like he can be younger.
Yeah.
But when he plays
the clothing too plays a little bit of
clothing.
Well, yeah. He's wearing a bandana in this movie. I don't know.
Which he wears in other films as well.
Yeah.
And I think he even wore a bandana to the Oscars once. Really? I think the year that he was nominated for Doubt, he had this, like, his black bandana.
Oh, I kind of remember. Like, what, like a
he looked very
Steve
weird.
Van Zandt.
Yeah, yeah, it was very Steve Van Zandt.
the least likable face I've ever seen. Steve Van Zandt.
Speaking of least likable faces, and we'll get to this a little later, but in our next film, there's a pretty unlikable face. I don't know the guy's name, but
talk about that's a guy that plays, and I think maybe for that movie we have, and that's can we say we, neither of us have seen that? Is that correct?
Yes, neither of us have seen the film.
Joey Breaker,
our next movie.
Kind of breaking my balls right now because it's hard to get a copy of it.
Yeah, we had to buy the VHS, but we're excited. We're gonna see it.
Thank you, Amazon. Thank you for Brian for purchasing.
Well, hopefully, whoever's selling me this VHS, don't scam me.
Yeah.
Send me the VHS, please, because we need to see Joey Breaker.
Yes.
Regardless, what you were going to say about the actor who plays him, which I...
Yeah, I don't know his name off the top of my head. I think I remember I started writing the... yeah, here we go. Richard Edson plays Joey. And can I say his most recognizable role is the car attendant in Ferris Bueller's Day Off? Is that fair?
That might be fair. I'd have to, again, we'll do the research for Joey Breaker, and we'll discuss that in next week's podcast.
Like you pointed out, he's in Starsky and Hutch.
Yeah, he buys the car at the auction, but again, we'll discuss that next week. But he has one of those faces as well. Yeah. Does Philip Seymour Hoffman have one of those faces, or is there something else that, if we're going back in time and we're seeing his career, he's on a roll here. Is he starring in the films? Not so much, but he's on a roll in terms of he's making 3 or 4 films a year.
He's definitely, he's being recognized by people.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I think they're seeing him in these small films, and they're saying, oh, he could totally do this. He could totally be that.
I don't know. To me, he's just somebody, so let's go by the character or the actor for next week's film, Richard Edson, like, you know, because we're saying about faces, and you just asked about Philip Seymour Hoffman's face. Richard Edson, two of them in a crowded room. I'm looking at Richard Edson because of his face. I'm looking at Philip Seymour Hoffman. I'm looking at him because of his, like, life force.
His presence, right? His presence. Even in a room. If we're going to talk about a physical thing with Philip Seymour Hoffman, that has always drawn me to him, and, like, I tried to think about this. For me, and I think we've mentioned this, his voice. He just has, like, this...
Yeah. That, if we were really gonna break down, like, make a list, like, you know, one down to whatever number we decide to stop at, first thing on the list is his voice.
Yeah, it's just great. It's just great. It's soothing, but it's also,
well, it's clay. He molds it.
Yeah, that's fair.
He totally, like, that's something... Steve Martin sounds like Steve Martin in this movie.
And he always will. And look, and Philip Seymour Hoffman always sounds
because
like
Steve Martin's not he's not really a character actor.
No, but Philip Seymour Hoffman again, he does change his voice drastically in certain films, yes. But
well, then he's got his archetype characters.
Yeah, his resting Philip Seymour Hoffman voice is still, it just fits the characters he plays so well. And in this film, Leap of Faith, anytime he talks, which is rare, how many lines would you say he has in this film?
In the end of the day, at most 20?
At most.
He's got, like, maybe some quick ones in the middle, but he's got some beginner ones because he's, like, collecting money and they're taking bets of Steve Martin talking to the cop in the opening scene, and then his only other big, I'm doing air quotes, big scene is after Boyd can walk and they're in the RV and saying about, like, Dallas
and
stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. So, but you remember him. And I think that goes back to what you're saying. I think casting directors, at the very least, are watching these movies and they're remembering him.
There's a lot of... I'm going to go back because on the first podcast, said how Twister was the first film I'd really like to say that was the first film I saw him in, but it's definitely the if for some reason I saw another film beforehand, but I was still when Twister came out, we were young.
Yeah.
So just as far as my memory goes, that's the first film I saw him in. But if anything, that's the first film that like he stood out to me in.
Yeah.
And that's something to say because that's like an ensemble.
Yeah, and he you could argue that
I saw Ferris Bueller's Day Off before that, and Fry's in that movie.
True. You could argue though that his role is the same in Twister. As in this film, Twister was seen.
But if they gave him more lines,
yeah, he's got a little bit more lines. He's got more memorable lines. Don't get me wrong, but he's still part of this same kind of team.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll discuss this kind of obviously more when we discuss Twister. But you still in these ensembles, you're recognizing him. Mm-hmm. You're picking him out. It's not just because we know him now. Like I can tell the difference between that, and I'm sure you can too. He's fun. At the very least, he's fun. Now, and something else...
He did more with his role than Meatloaf did. Absolutely. And I like Meatloaf.
I love Meatloaf.
Well, yeah. I mean, I love Meatloaf. But as a person, saying, like,
not like... Yeah. I mean, he's an okay actor. I don't know. So this is something we touched on while we were just discussing when we first met up today, though, is that this is kind of the opposite of the other films that we've reviewed of him, or a lot of the other ones mm-hmm. so far, in terms of he's in it throughout the movie. But doesn't say too much.
Yeah, he has more screen time, but he has pretty much the same amount of dialogue as Triple Bogey and My New Gun.
Yeah, essentially. He doesn't have a scene here, really.
I'm looking forward to Joey Breaker. I feel like he has a little bit... It looks like he might be... Because we watched the trailer. Looks like he might be Joey's assistant or something like that.
Yeah, I believe he's Joey's assistant in that one.
So it looks like he...
So he'll have more of a scene here, but I have to say it was nice seeing him throughout. It was nice seeing him in the background.
And again, people, this is like the second year of his career.
He's doing well.
third theatrical film.
It's funny because I feel like it'll take him a while to be recognized as like a household name.
Yeah.
A while, but he jumps on the screen fast, and he just becomes a prolific actor in terms of mm-hmm. projects.
Definitely. Well, I mean, I think we did our best with Leap of Faith.
Leap of Faith. I mean, maybe we'll go to a revival this weekend. Interested?
Sure.
I don't know.
Would be the close revival in like Pennsylvania?
I honestly,
we're in New York City right now.
I couldn't tell you. I'm sure we could find him in the city. You could find anything in the city.
Woo.
Regardless, thanks for listening, guys. Leap of Faith. Next week, as we mentioned, is Joey Breaker.
Yep, Joey Breaker.
Like, movie neither of us have seen, but we're definitely excited to see it. So, guys, once again, don't forget to like us on Facebook.
Yes.
Email us at...
psilovehoffman@gmail.com.
And listen to all the other stuff on Cage Club. It's just some really good stuff. And some
interesting stuff ahead for Cage Club. Looking forward to
definitely.
It.
Definitely. And thanks as always, guys.
Yes. I just want to say, the more you give, the more you live. Just remember that, people, if you would like to make donations to our podcast.
Yeah. We'll be passing the bucket around.
Yeah, just hit me up on Venmo.
A Venmo.
Damn it.
Venmo. Sorry. I was like, what are you talking about?
All right, Venmo.
Yes, hit Kyle up on Venmo.
Where did you come from, baby? How did you know I needed you? How did you know I needed you so badly? How did you know I'd give my heart? Sex a thing, you. I'm